I think there are four defining elements that go into the basic impetus to drive the ruling class to assassinate, execute Martin Luther King. The first, I would say, is his meetings with Malcolm X and their pursuit together of a political struggle and a political organization to conduct the struggle on a broad class-based scale in the United States. The second, of course, is his advocacy of a break with the imperial war in Vietnam, his seminal speech at the Riverside Church in which he described the United States government as the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the earth, and in which he associated war in Vietnam with a war against people of who work for a living, impoverished people, people of color, and connected the imperial onslaught on the people of Vietnam with the onslaught against the poor and oppressed in the United States. And I would say that the the third element was the, and perhaps in a certain sense, Elambe, a culmination here, was Martin Luther King's call for a poor people's march on Washington that would combine a rejection of the war with specific demands for the funding of housing and health care and schools and the basic needs of people and the cutting of the billions of dollars out of the military budget, and he called for people to remain in Washington and to carry on a series of mass meetings and demands to be made upon the people in Congress from both parties. These were the calls for a class-based mobilization that prepared for a revolutionary struggle in the United States. The ruling class took note of this and marked him for elimination. And, you know, Lambie, there's another particular reflection of this that I don't think is as well known. Martin came out to San Francisco to the International Longshore Workers Union Local 10, where he was involved in support for the what became the first black leader of a major union in the United States. And in his involvement in ILWU Local 10 and the support for a black presence in the trade union leadership, he also gave a speech at a rally at the Coliseum in Oakland in which he called upon rank-and-file trade unionists to join in this struggle for social justice, in this struggle against war, in this struggle against racial oppression, and to link the class struggle to the struggle for civil rights in this country. It was a shot across the bow of the conservatized AFL-CIO trade union bureaucracy, and these were the elements together which prepared the basis for a real mass movement in the United States. They targeted him, and there was no question but that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Council made the elimination of Martin Luther King a priority because he was going, as we are describing here, beyond the question of a nonviolent movement for obtaining civil rights to a movement that challenged the basis of power for that tiny handful of people who have got control over the economic and political life of our country.
Ralph, that's very good for the introduction, but let me say this now to the listeners. One of the things that we're trying to do in this particular part of the programs this evening is to to investigate the assassination of Martin Luther King, and also the different forces that were arrayed against him as his scope in trying to find a way, a solution to not only the problems of black people in the United States, but poor people in the United States, but also becoming engaged in the struggle of poor people all over the world. But one of the things we wanted to do in trying to do that is to talk to Ralph. But we have to remind you that we're still very much involved in our Martin Luther King Day special drive, and that this is all part of that. So instead of like always going back referring to the premiums that we had, I'd like to just go through some of the things for you, so to tell you that while Ralph is talking and giving you this information, we would like very much for you to call. And of course, we're dealing with one piece called Shortcut to the Mountaintop, which is a music set of Dr. King's speeches and CD for $25. There's At the River I Stand, a video cassette only, $75. A Call to Consciousness, a book edited by Claiborne Carson, and that's $100. The Words of Martin Luther King Jr. by Coretta Scott King, of course, his wife and widow, that's $60. The Autobiography of Martin Luther King Jr. by Ed Claiborne, again, Claiborne Carson, excuse me, $80. A Knock at Midnight, which is eight CD box of speeches of Martin Luther King for $200. A Call to Consciousness speeches of Martin Luther King Jr., which is a 7 CD box set for $200. An Exposé into the Death of Martin Luther King Jr., which is taking aim. I don't see the price here. That's funny because there's a blank right next to it. But one of the things you know is that what you're hearing with Ralph today, you can be listening to. But there is CDs from Ralph Schoenman that is listed here, but the CD numbers are not here, nor is the blank.
We're going to be presenting the interview and the discussion we're having today as well, Ilambe. Mm. And I know you and I want to go into this. I want to go into the actual dynamics, the architecture of the assassination,
right.
Who did what to who, how it was done, which I don't think many people fully understand.
Okay.
And the number for people to call.
The number is area code 212-209-2950.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we need for people to remember. And, of course, Citizen King, a DVD, a documentary, a film, and that's $125. Also, what was the same thing? I see it here twice. And the generics, we're talking about the WBAI mug, $6. The WBAI tote bag, $60. The WBAI gold package with hat, mug, and tote bag, which is $125. The WBAI gold baseball cap, which is $60. The WBAI gold T-shirt, which medium size, which is $60. The large size is also $60, and so is the extra large and the double X large. $70.
And we can, and the listeners can pay, yeah, using their Visa card, their MasterCard, or American Express. There are volunteers in the back waiting to take their telephone calls now, mm-hmm, to support this radio station, support the effort that is going on this afternoon, particularly, mm-hmm, this hour as we go into the analysis of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. Ilambe Brath,
right,
hosting here in studio, Ralph Schoenman on the phone with us, and we'll be going to that straight away. Ilambe, just before you go to that ad, I wanted to get out for the listeners that the Patrice Lumumba Coalition, Afro Kaleidoscope, and the Marcus Garvey Holistic Center are inviting all the listeners to a African Internationalist Forum, and this fits right in to what you and Ralph are talking about. Martin Luther King, Laurent Kabila, and Patrice Lumumba were these three leaders assassinated by the same forces for the same reasons. That's going to be taking place tomorrow, the 17th, from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Marcus Garvey Holistic Center, 5105 Church Avenue, between 51st and 52nd Street near Utica Avenue. A number of people will be participating. Donations are welcome, but the admission is free. For further information, you could call Brother Nvenge at 718-363-8255. 8043. Please pardon me, Alabe. I wanted to get that in because I know that was very important, and I didn't want time to get away from you before you were able to say that.
Okay, just let me add that there's also, among the membership specials, the WBI Anniversary T-shirt, which is large, gray, $25. The WBI Anniversary T-shirt, extra large, also gray, and it's $25. And the WBI Anniversary T-shirt, double X, large, it's also gray, $25. I just want you to get that in there because I didn't want to continue without you knowing that we are expecting, and you know, people are calling in now, but we want you to know that while Ralph is talking, we'd like for you to call area code 212-209-2950. That's area code 212-209-2950. Ralph, back to you.
Yes, you know, let's keep something in mind here, and I urge everybody to call in their support. This is a support for the kind of programming we do. It's just it's a commemoration of the real meaning of the, not just the life and struggle, but the real understanding of the significance of the execution of Martin Luther King. This is the kind of analysis, understanding that we need to mobilize a new generation. Support it, please. Call in your support. We have to keep something in mind. Malcolm, in his last months, was very deeply engaged with Africa. I happened to be working with Malcolm in that period in London. Malcolm was deeply committed to the struggle in Africa. He went to East Africa, where he met with Pio Gama da Pinto, who was the Kenyan of Goan descent, who a lawyer and a key organizer of the Kenya-Africa Union. And indeed, Pio Gama da Pinto had been a major formative influence with Mohamed Babu, with Denis Mwambeya, with the nationalist leaders of Tanzania, Tanganyika at the time, and had published a publication called Pan-Africa, and was centered at that time on the struggle for the Congo. Because with the CIA execution of Patrice Lumumba and the subsequent destruction of the national independence movement in Congo with the pursuit of Antoine Gizenga and Pierre Mulele in Congo. This was the struggle not only for Congo but for all of Southern Africa, and Pio was deeply engaged in this. Malcolm spent a lot of time with Pio and was profoundly influenced by Pio's analysis of the link between the anti-imperial struggle, the struggle for national independence, and the struggle for social revolution in Africa, and its link to the struggle of the oppressed in the United States. Same enemy, same class roots of oppression, same common task. Malcolm was poisoned in Accra. He was poisoned in Cairo. He was marked when he came back from Africa, and he was extremely determined and conscious of the necessity to link the struggle for liberation in Africa with the struggle for liberation in the United States. Kodjo Amu-Gottfried, who was a leader of the Ghanaian Youth Movement and the Ideological Institute of Winneba at that time, Kodjo and I were driving with Malcolm, and we were pleading with him to wear a bulletproof vest. And Malcolm at the time said, "Bulletproof vests won't do. The task is to build a movement, to build an organization, to link struggles both within the United States and without, and until we do that, we can have movements decapitated at will." That Malcolm understood very clearly, and when he came back, he went and had meetings with Martin Luther King, and the discussions that they had, King and Malcolm, had to do with the prospect of combining their efforts to construct a political movement of class and racial justice struggle in this country, linked with it to the opposition to imperial adventure from Vietnam and in particular in Africa. And of course, the struggle for the Congo is ongoing today, as it has been since Patrice Lumumba was targeted by Central Intelligence Agency, with the point man in that murder of Patrice Lumumba being Frank Carlucci. And as Alumbi and I have often discussed in the past, the protege of Frank Colucci was Colombe's classmate in Bronx High School, somebody named Colin Powell. So what goes around comes around here. It's an ongoing struggle that each generation has to confront. We are linked directly to the struggles of Malcolm and Martin. We're confronted by the same forces, and we draw from the same roots of oppression and the need to fight back. And that's the dynamic, really, that underlies these assassinations. Because bear in mind something. When Kennedy was killed in 1963, Malcolm X said, "You can't have death squads roaming the planet and think they're going to stop at your national frontier. The chickens have come home to roost." And when Malcolm took on the government role in the assassination of Kennedy, that precipitated the crisis within the Nation of Islam when Elijah Muhammad repudiated Malcolm for doing this, and Malcolm persisted in his determination to build a political movement, a movement based on struggle and mobilization of the masses in this country. The links are there, the links are real, and indeed, when Malcolm was murdered and gunned down in New York, the first person on the stage to offer mouth-to-mouth resuscitation was an FBI operative. And when Martin Luther King was executed on the balcony of the Lorraine Hotel, the first man to bend over him and who was so notably photographed doing that was Merrill McCullough, an undercover Memphis police operative and a CIA operative as well, involved in the planning of the murder of Martin Luther King. These are murders of the capitalist state against charismatic and mass leaders designed to decapitate our movement. And what went on with respect to Patrice Lumumba and Malcolm was then visited upon Martin. One note here, Lumbe, parenthetically, on the day that Malcolm was gunned down in New York, Pio Gama da Pinto, Pio, who had been so important in the politics of Kenya, in his links with Oginga Odinga, and Bildad Kaggia, who was a mass Kikuyu leader in Kenya, Pio had the habit when he would go to his office, his daughters would get in the car with him when he would go down his driveway, and when he got to the end of the driveway, he'd let them out and he'd continue onto his office. On the day that Malcolm was gunned down, the same day, when Pio had got to the end of the driveway and the little girls got out, he was assassinated in a crossfire with assassins who gunned down Pio Gama da Pinto on the same day that Malcolm was murdered in New York. None of us was the meaning of this lost.
Well, and, these connections, and you always like to do is draw the dots when you can look and see that, as I said before, about King's assassination following 1 year after he made this speech about the United States being the biggest purveyor of violence in the world today, from April the 4th, 1967, to April the 4th, 1968. And then what you talked about, the struggles between Malcolm and the assassination times, Pio folks is P-I-O, Pinto, P-I-N-T-O.
Pio Gama da Pinto.
Gama da Pinto, yeah.
And let me mention to you, I was talking to Kojo just yesterday in Accra, and Kojo is living in both Accra and Kumasi. He sends you his greetings.
Okay.
Kojo, Kojo was Ghana's ambassador to, subsequently to Havana, and then to Managua during the time of the Sandinistas, and to Vietnam, and to China. And Kojo is alive and well, and still going strong in Accra.
But the other brother, Bill, that you had mentioned before, just now when you were talking about
Pio Gama da Pinto.
No, the other brother.
Gildad Kaggia?
Yeah.
Or Gingo Odinga?
No, Kaggia. The one he died last year.
No, I think Bildad died earlier than that alumni, I believe so.
I thought I saw something about it in the Times because it was
Bildad was poisoned around the time that that Malcolm was. There was an attempt on his life. There was an attempt on Ogingo Odinga's life. This was an onslaught on the national liberation leadership in East Africa, and that I think highlights what we're trying to point up here. The very understanding that was transforming Malcolm and Martin Luther King in the last years of their respective lives. One thing I think we have to call attention to, Alambe, and that is that the evidence concerning the murder of Martin Luther King is not just a matter of the investigative work that so many have done and that has been done. But there was an actual trial that took place in Memphis on December 8, 1999, and lasted almost a month, in which Bill Pepper, the attorney, on behalf of the King family, Dexter and Martin Luther King III, brought a charge against Lloyd Jowers and others. Lloyd Jowers being one of those involved in the plot to murder Martin Luther King, Jowers having come forward. And for 4 weeks of intense testimony in the trial in Memphis before the district court, the evidence was presented, the jury finding unanimously that the 111th Army Intelligence Unit and the Central Intelligence Agency and the government of the United States, the 111th Military Intelligence Group, by the way, based at Fort McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia, had organized and implemented the assassination of Martin Luther King. There is, in fact, a very precise chronology here. In the 3 weeks prior to the execution of Martin, J. Edgar Hoover held a series of meetings with the Central Intelligence Agency and military intelligence, and that specific units of military intelligence who had been responsible for the Phoenix program in Laos and in Vietnam. So as Malcolm and Martin were saying, the execution operations of the imperialist state in Vietnam, in Africa, had direct relevance to the oppression of blacks and people who are working for a living in the United States. Lloyd Jower had been contacted by a mafia operative working with CIA whose name was Frank Liberto to be involved in the murder plan of Martin Luther King. Jowers was told that they were setting up a decoy in the plot and that the police had been organized and would be called off at the night. Liberto had a courier deliver $100,000 to Jowers, which he held at his restaurant, and the meetings to carry out the execution took place on-the-ground meetings with the logistics were carried through at Jim's Grill. I mentioned Merrill McCullough, who bent over Martin on the balcony of the Lorraine after he was shot. This was the Memphis Police Department officer and CIA operative. Earl Clark, Memphis Police Department lieutenant. Another Memphis Police Department officer and two CIA operatives conducted the actual logistical planning. And present at the meetings was a man named Raoul. Now, Raoul provided a rifle for Jowers to hold. This was going to be the rifle that was planted on James Earl Ray. Parenthetically, when the assassination of Kennedy occurred in 1963, there were three tramps who were arrested at the grassy knoll at the railway overpass. They were disguised as tramps. One of them was a dead ringer for the man known as Frenchie or Raoul, and we know that because the FBI local office, immediately after the killing of Martin Luther King, sent out an all-points bulletin for Raul, and the photograph that was disseminated was is a dead ringer for the third tramp, Raul or Frenchie. And that was part of the data that Dick Gregory and I brought to the Rockefeller Commission in 1975. And from March to April 1968, the 111th Military Intelligence Group, based at Fort McPherson in Atlanta, which had had Martin under continued surveillance, including wiretaps, was now brought into play. And in fact, they were positioned on buildings across from the balcony of the Lorraine Hotel, and they were taking aim at Martin Luther. They were positioned to carry out the assassination if the Hearst shooters did not succeed. The detailed evidence about this was presented by Lloyd Jowers, who came clean in the trial, and names were named. Captain Jerry Williams of the Memphis Police Department formed a security unit. Emergency tactical forces were brought into play. Carthel Whedon, captain of Fire Station 2, was approached by two Army intelligence officers demanding that the lookout for the Lorraine Hotel should be facilitated by the fire department so that the military intelligence hitmen of the 111th Military Intelligence Group could be positioned. As I mentioned, these were the same people who were involved with running the Phoenix program in Vietnam. The Army personnel present in Memphis also included Green Beret-trained snipers and assassins.
Ralph, let me just intervene here for a second to remind our listeners that, you know, Ralph is going heavily into a lot of the detailed information that he always puts out on every issue, and of course he has, as I said here, when you call in the premium room, you can ask for taking aim what is actually going here, because I can't tell by the blank space there. But I think that you need to be calling all along, because we only have a short time here. We are halfway through the first hour, and I think that I know that you're really attentive and very much glued to the radio, but you really need to get to the phone at area code 212-209-2950. That's area code 212-209-2950, and call at Bank of Pledge to the station. After all, if we don't really do this, we will not be able to have, you know, this station on. You know, many people are looking forward to the days, you know, not many people, I guess certain people, the days when they can turn on and hear something else that is not so telling and exposing of the United States and what it's actually doing, not just against people in other countries, but what it's doing to the people in this country, because right now we're talking about a national security state, a national security corporate state that is actually tightening its belt. Once they get past Samuel Alito in the Supreme Court, even if Bush was to drop dead or to be killed, the next maybe 30 or 40 years of the United States will be locked in place. We need to think about that. And so there's various things that come on this program that you have to listen to and understand how they play out in the scheme of things. All these programs, if we don't think, we think we have some archives, you can believe that the National Security Agency has better archives on WBAI and other Pacifica stations than Pacifica itself.
Right, and allow me just to flesh this out. A black Memphis Police Department detective named Ed Reddit, who was removed from his surveillance post at the fire station. Reddit had been watching Martin Luther King and his party across the street. Now the intelligence officer, Eli Arkin, comes to the fire station and removes Reddit to central headquarters. And then the FBI operative, Fire Director Frank Holloman, is put in place. He was, by the way, the appointment secretary for J. Edgar Hoover. Holloman informs Reddit that a Secret Service agent has flown in from Washington Now, Frank Liberto, who is involved, as I mentioned, in the coordinating of this, is heard speaking on a telephone, and he says, shoot the son of a bitch when he comes on the balcony. This information, by the way, was given to the police and FBI, and, of course, only came to light in the trial itself. I mentioned Merrill McCullough, the CIA operative. Now there is a unit that had infiltrated a Memphis community organizing group called the Invaders that was driving around with James Orange and James Bevel, and they were part of the penetration of the movement at the time and were involved in the coordinating of these events. An Army PSYOPs team photographed everything that was occurring. Members of the U.S. Army 111th Military Intelligence Group took photos while the King assassins were moved in position, took aim, fired, and walked away. Immediately after the killing, Lieutenant Earl Clark gave the smoking rifle to Jowers at the rear door of Jim's Grill. And then we have J.D. Hill, a member of the Army sniper team in Memphis, who was assigned to as a backup shooter, and his expertise was in triangular shooting. He had a sniper team taking up positions in the water tower and in two buildings directly across. Snipers from the Army 20th Special Forces Group were also involved here. I think we can see just the extraordinary organization of this by military intelligence, by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is the whole capitalist state mobilizing its killer squads in uniform in multiple locations to make sure that Martin did not survive on the balcony of the Lorraine Hotel. And then when the police, as it were, fined a 30 so-called find in shutter quotes a 30.06 Remington Game Master. This was then attributed to James Earl Ray, and the Patsy was now in place. By the way, the day before the execution of Martin Luther King, special forces were mobilized in Washington, D.C., and military units in cities across the United States in anticipation of the outburst of rage that was anticipated from black inner cities across this country. They were already setting up in preparation for the repression of the populace in response to the murder of Martin before the murder unfolded. There's a great deal more that I could go into here about the particulars about the execution of Martin Luther King. Suffice it to say that we have the documented evidence here of the 111th, of the 20th Army Special Forces, of Army units, CIA, FBI, of all of the plans in the, for the murder coordinated as such, and much of this evidence produced in the actual trial. What do we have in this country? Every sexcapade is called the trial of the century. The setting up of O.J. Simpson, that's the trial of the century. But the real trial of the century that occurred in 1999 in Memphis, when the specifics with the names named and the actual intelligence and military units set forth, presented in hard evidence before a jury, not a syllable of that reported in the mainstream media. Even with Dexter and Martin Luther King III and Coretta Scott King speaking to this, having press conferences about this, suppressed throughout this country. The mainstream media to this day have acted as if this trial and this evidence has never occurred and has never surfaced. And that, I think, brothers and sisters, if anything, highlights the importance of free speech radio and of the ability to present the realities of capitalist America to our people, and to mobilize our constituents and to prepare for the struggles ahead, because without information and without understanding, there is no movement and there is no struggle. So on this anniversary, celebrating the life of Martin Luther King, and as we understand the meaning of his death and the nature of his death, see, please, brothers and sisters, the intimate connection between what we're discussing here and the importance of Free Speech Radio, of WBAI, and of the programming that we're bringing to you. Call in your support. Be part of the struggle. This is not a spectator sport.
Right. As a matter of fact, you know, we have all of these videos, DVDs here, and one of them, of course, what I mentioned before about Citizen King, which is a very powerful documentary. I mean, it's a PBS documentary. And that there's it's for $125 either by a DVD or by VHS. And I think you need to call in some of these speeches that we've been listening to all day. Anything you call is good, but right now you're getting a supplement, you know, from Ralph Shoneman on the actual death of Martin Luther King. And of course, he's already done that information in Taking Aim on several CDs, expose into the death of Martin Luther King Jr. So when you call back area code in the back and at area code 212-209-2950, ask for them about what is in regards to the Taking Aim's CD opportunity. But nevertheless, whatever, you need to actually get involved with taking some of these CDs or getting some of them so that you can actually, in fact, maybe a several you can get together and somebody buy one and somebody else buy another one, and then you have a whole set for yourselves, and you could have a, you know, community learning center political classes, because we need this information. If this station were to close down and go somewhere else or be phased out, what will happen is you will not be hearing these things again. Probably if they're actually able to get the thing, they would probably get rid of the whole archives. So what we're talking about now, as you see, there's a possibility that you see where they listen to everything you're saying. They're taking down everything. I mean, anything that goes out of this country now can be documented, can be pinpointed. They have every way of actually trying to make sure that you don't have an opportunity to get any information out, and they're going to make sure that you can't get any information in. And the best way they would do that is to close down WBAI here in New York, because you're right at the center of all of these things. So I suggest to you that you call in and continue to call in on area code 212-209-2950 in order to support this station and what we're doing right now. Ralph, you can continue.
You know, yes, Lombe, and let me mention some of the particulars. You know, at the trial, Lavada Addison, who was a friend of this Liberto, testified that he had stated to her that he had Martin Luther King killed. And Addison's son, Nathan Whitlock, testified that that Liberto had confirmed point blank. He said, "I didn't kill the nigger, I had it done." And then he was asked, "What about the other SOB taking credit for it?" He was simply our front man. He was our setup man. All of this emerging at the trial, and indeed the role of Merrill McCullough, working for the Central Intelligence Agency, the undercover MPD, Memphis Police Department operative, again, his role was described by Andrew Young, who witnessed the assassination and identified McCullough as the person kneeling over King's body on the balcony. The witness, Colby Vernon Smith, who had infiltrated a Memphis community organizing group, as I mentioned, the invaders, stated that MPD intelligence had been setting up a King. One manifestation of this was described by Coretta Scott King, who testified that when Martin had to return to Memphis in early April 1968, it was because when he walked with the garbage workers of Memphis, in that seminal moment when Martin linked the civil rights struggle with the struggle of rank and file workers and marched with the white garbage workers of Memphis, Tennessee. The Sanitation Workers March was immediately disrupted by government provocateurs who began a series of violent confrontations that created the rationale for the police to break it up and compelled King to return to Memphis in order to demonstrate, as King felt he had to do, that he could, in fact, continue to mobilize nonviolent marches and mobilizations. These were the prepared circumstances for getting him back there and for providing for the time frame they needed to set in motion the plans for his assassination. Again, at the trial, not only did the dynamics of the assassination itself unfold, but the plans for suppressing the community across the United States in every city were laid out in evidence at the trial in Memphis. So what we're looking at here, brothers and sisters, is the ongoing role of the capitalist state in organizing our suppression, and in the, as Alambe was mentioning, and as we have been programming in the past 2 weeks on Taking Aim, and we'll be doing so again tomorrow, the National Security Agency and the echelon that are monitoring, it's not just telephone calls, brothers and sisters, it isn't just our mail, it isn't just our email. This computer spying apparatus is of such sophistication and on such a scale that every house that we inhabit, they have tracked in which direction the doors swing, left or right. They have a complete blueprint of every room we occupy. They are monitoring our cars and their movements. This is the apparatus of the capitalist state in decay when they take as their principal enemy the population of the people of the United States themselves. And the murder of Malcolm and the murder of Martin are the touchstone of what we are witnessing now as we see the architecture of the fascist state unfolding before our eyes in Washington, D.C. I urge everybody to continue to support, to call in your support for the programming that we're doing to commemorate Martin by getting the information, by mastering the information, by disseminating the information, and by responding to the political task that we have before us, which is to build that movement for the transformation of our society.
Yes, I hear you, Ralph, and I know you are so much in contact with a lot of these various things that you speak of, and what you don't know directly, you know from other people who have the bits and pieces that sort of you have to put the dots together. But it's very, very important what we're talking about here about the deaths, the not a death, because it was not just a simple death. Like tomorrow, we'll be doing something with that deals with the assassination of Patrice Lumumba and Laurent Kabila. But we also looked to the observation of the birthday of Martin Luther King, January the 15th, 1929. And the three dates just coordinated together. And you look at January the 16th, 2001, which was the assassination of Laurent Kabila, shortly after the CIA and the United States, along with Rwanda and Uganda, set up a invasion into the Congo to start a war, because Laurent Kabila, in the last month in July in 1998, slipped into this hemisphere and met with Fidel Castro, trying to talk about getting a connection like they had with Che Guevara, And when the U.S. intelligence services heard, they gave the signal to the Rwandans, who have a direct line to the Pentagon, a direct connection. They are client state of the United States, as were the Ugandan army. And of course, with the joint JSET, the Joint Combined Education Training Program, and with IMET, the International Military Education Exchange Training Program, both of them were client states of the United States, and both of them started the war that actually got Kabila killed, which was because he was trying to reconnect the original DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, which was what Lumumba had brought forth on the June 30th, 1960, and the fact that they saw that this cadre, who was in the southern part of the struggles with the Simbas, and a longtime cadre with Patrice Lumumba, a person coming out of the seatbed where Chambi and the forces that hated Lumumba were, he was a cadre there, and kept up the fight throughout these years, so that when Mobutu fell, they had to come in and get somebody who had the proper credentials. But they thought that they would be able to use Kabila to carry out their wishes and containing Mobutuism in the Congo without Mobutu. And so that's what this thing is about tomorrow, which we are probably talking about a little bit.
Let's address that, Olumbe, because the... First of all, you know, when Patrice Lumumba and the National Independence Movement came to office in Kinshasa in Congo, immediately the imperialists targeted the two provinces of the Congo in which 75% of the industrial diamonds were located, and in which the titanium, which formed the particular metal that was used on missiles in the United States, all of that was coming from Katanga and Kasai. And that's when the Trombe undertaking to amputate the two provinces of the Congo and destroy the National Independence Movement was set in motion. And in the CIA operation to murder Patrice Lumumba, one of those of his young followers who was involved in resistance was Laurent Kabila. And when Che Guevara went to Congo in 1964, he was working with Kabila, with Pierre Mulele, in attempting to cohere a fight-back movement of the National Independence Movement of Congo. You mentioned Rwanda and Burundi. As we have discussed,
Uganda.
Uganda, yes, with Museveni. Yeah. But I want to mention Lambe, as you and I have both discussed on many occasions, the genocide that unfolded in between the Hutu and the Tutsi in Rwanda and Burundi has its origins in a intelligence agency assassination, the downing of the airplane. The penetration of the special forces that were set in motion to destroy those populations and to orchestrate this genocide, because what is at stake in Congo and Central Africa is as much today as it was then. One manifestation of this, Mobutu leased almost a million square miles of Congo. To the World Health Organization and to the Center for Disease Control, where these institutions carried out a vast program of so-called vaccination, targeting the populations of Congo and adjacent peoples. The Times of London in 1987 on its front page ran a story in which they described a grid that had been placed over the areas of the Congo in which these vaccination programs had been imposed, and the emergence of AIDS clusters across Africa in Central Africa were in one-to-one correlation to the location of those so-called vaccination programs.
Yeah,
it is a genocidal pursuit of the peoples of Africa as it is of the people of our country in the creating of the next pandemic. These things are all intimately bound up. Imperialism has, the capitalist state has degenerated into a murder apparatus, and the murder of Martin Luther King and Malcolm is the quintessence expressing that.
That's why I've always maintained that the real age problem we have is an acquired imperialist dependency syndrome. You know, there's nothing that'll be, and you more people are becoming to understand that.